Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mgabi, your host.
And Wanjiko Mora from the social media desk.
Coming up, farmers in southern parts of Africa on high alert after armyworms invade crops.
We have four farmers that are plowing next to each other. It has affected us all. So my fear is the government might look at your commercial farmers and forget us small farmers in rural areas.
We'll also be following some of the stories that you have been commenting on our Facebook page.
That's right, indeed. The former chairperson of the African Union Commission, Jean Ping, tells DW why he thinks Gabon was not the ideal country to host the just concluded African football tournament.
While we are facing difficulties in our country, salary are not paid, school are not built, how can we spend such amount of money just for building stadium?
These stories and much more to come in the next 30 minutes. But first, let's listen to what's happening around the world.
I'm Shea Meineke with DW News. Soldiers in the southeastern Ivory Coast town of Adiaka have opened fire and blocked traffic in an apparent mutiny over wages. Witnesses reported on Tuesday that the town's population was evacuated after gunfire could be heard for hours. It is not the first stage mutiny over unpaid wages, as uprising last month among security forces spread quickly across the West African country. Though a deal was announced with some soldiers last month, other soldiers and security forces have recently sought payoffs of their own. A powerful blast has rocked Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, killing at least 20 people and wounding more than 40 others. Officials have said the number of reported dead is expected to rise as rescue efforts continue. The blast hit close to a U.S. embassy and near the Afghan Supreme Court as employees were leaving work. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the blast, although Taliban insurgents have previously bombed the court. An appeals court is due to hear the U.S. Justice Department's arguments over whether President Donald Trump's travel ban should be reinstated. 15 U.S. states and Washington, D.C. have fought against Trump's travel ban, which temporarily bars people from seven Muslim-majority states from entering the U.S. Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro spoke to reporters ahead of the appeals court showdown.
This should not be viewed through the prism of politics. Rather, this should be viewed through the prism of standing up and protecting the rule of law, standing up and protecting people's constitutional rights, and standing up and doing what we think is just.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Thousands of Somali soldiers have descended on capital Mogadishu to impose a lockdown ahead of general elections on Wednesday. Officials say the long-awaited elections, which have been delayed four times, should be held on schedule as 23 candidates vie for the vote. There have been allegations of abuse and fraud ahead of the elections. We go to journalist Liban Ahmed, an expert on Somalia, for more.
The United Nations office in Somalia is keeping an eye on the election. They said that anyone who is elected on the basis of bribes will not be recognized as a legitimate president.
Pop star sensation Madonna has adopted 2 4-year-old twin Malawian girls. Madonna has already adopted 2 children from the Southeast African country, a boy in 2006 and a girl in 2009. She has 2 other children from previous relationships. The 58-year-old singer had previously denied rumors that she had applied to adopt more children when visiting the country in January, instead saying she was there to check on her Raising Malawi charity group. And now in sports, a global athletics body has extended its ban on Russian athletes competing in international events. The ban, which stemmed from an alleged mass doping program, would be continued until at least November, likely forcing Russian athletes to miss the World Championships in London this summer. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shea Meineke.
Welcome to Africa Link once again. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the Social Media Desk.
We begin the program in Southern Africa, where farmers have all reasons to get worried after armyworms invaded hundreds of hectares of crops, raising fears of another episode of poor harvests. Recently, Southern Africa was hit by an El Niño-induced drought that affected farming and livestock. The region has been still recovering from the after effects of the drought before the pests came in. The armyworm has its origins in North and South America, and it was first discovered in Africa in 2016. Tuzo Kumalo reports.
The destructive caterpillar, which later turns into a moth, targets maize, sorghum, soybeans, groundnuts, and potatoes. An estimated 124,000 hectares have been destroyed in Zambia, with Malawi having lost 2,000 hectares of crops. South Africa is still assessing the spread and the damage, but already three of the country's provinces are affected. In early days, the young larva, usually pale green with black heads, feed near the surface of the ground. The full-grown larva vary from pale green to almost black in color with a reddish head. South Africa is frantically working towards registering a pesticide to control the armyworm, and Agriculture Minister Senzeni Zokwana says urgent action is required from the entire region.
The department realizes that transboundary pests and diseases, especially migratory pests, threaten food security, and that coordination regional efforts are important to address these risks, to ensure early warnings of these biological threats are in place.
Countries where this fall worm has been confirmed are likely to face an export ban, which could be a big blow to farmers and these countries' economies. Jan Hendrik Venter, a plant scientist at the Department of Agriculture in South Africa, says the pest is spreading at an alarming rate.
We're used to the common African armyworm, but this is something new. It has a life cycle of about 24 to 40 days, gets onto the prevailing winds and can migrate large distances. So it comes as no real surprise that it has covered vast areas of Africa very quickly indeed.
Willie, a rural farmer in the Limpopo province, says farmers are extremely worried.
We have four farmers that are plowing next to each other. It has affected us all. So my fear is the government might look at your commercial farmers and forget us small farmers in rural areas, that we might end up losing the whole crop.
If a pesticide is not delivered to the fields immediately, the effects will be devastating to these countries, most of which are already experiencing hunger due to the persistent El Nino-induced drought.
Tuzo Kumalo with that report from South Africa. A conference to address the issue of the pests is scheduled for next week in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. So, Wanjiko, what are people saying about this particular story regarding the pests that have invaded crops in Southern Africa?
Well, we have a comment from David Ansho, who says, first came the drought, then came the flood, now comes the armyworms. Which plague is next for Zimbabwe? Of course, this means that people are worrying about food security in Southern Africa.
Exactly. Anyway, attacks by the Islamist militia group Boko Haram have died down in recent months, but the suffering among the population is great. More than 2 million people have been forced to flee their homes because of attacks by Boko Haram and military campaigns against them. The UN warns that 500,000 children are malnourished. The Boko Haram crisis has affected people in countries such as Nigeria, Niger, Chad, and Cameroon, commonly called the Lake Chad region. A donors conference is scheduled in Norway at the end of this month to raise more money to help the victims of Boko Haram. And the UN's humanitarian coordinator for the region, Toby Lanza, is in Berlin today for talks ahead of the conference. Our correspondent, Daniel Peltz, caught up with him and began by asking how the humanitarian situation in the Lake Chad region actually is at the moment.
The situation continues to be very grave. I think over the past few months, we have understood more fully what is happening, thanks to an improved security situation, which has enabled the United Nations and its partners to travel further afield from the main town, known as Maiduguri, and get a stronger appreciation from the people themselves who have been stuck in so many villages and towns. But we know that there are millions of people in desperate need of humanitarian assistance, and we're doing our utmost now, together with the international community, to meet the needs.
Has the response from foreign governments been adequate so far?
Well, adequate is a difficult word to use, and I think there are so many crises in different parts of the world. I think that via Deutsche Welle and others, we're hoping to get the word out that there is a particularly grave crisis. The numbers are huge, 10 million in need, 7 million who were severely food insecure, 515,000 children who are acutely malnourished. And so I don't think any single government on earth could face that alone. And international solidarity is required, and that is required at a time when pressures are high all over the globe. And so, no, the response is inadequate at the moment, but I'm hopeful that in the coming weeks more countries will come on board and help the UN and help the non-governmental organizations to work with the communities and the authorities of Cameroon, of Chad, of Niger, and of course of Nigeria to meet the needs.
What kind of support would you wish from the German government in particular, since you are now in Germany?
Well, I think Germany has really come on board as a very staunch supporter in political terms, and the Chancellor herself has been to Niger, one of the key countries in this region. I think that political support usually signals financial support, which I understand will be on its way. And at the end of the day, that's actually what people need, because money will be translated into medicines, food, shelter, and all the other things that people who are in desperate need require on a day-to-day basis to weather this terrible storm that's afflicting them.
Toby Lanza, the Assistant UN Secretary General in charge of humanitarian affairs in the Lake Chad region. Now, with the Africa Cup of Nations over and business back to normal in Gabon, the former chairperson of the African Union and the former presidential aspirant in the previous presidential elections, Jean Ping, in an exclusive interview has told my colleague Aaron Krish that the event wasn't a success. He accused the authorities in Gabon of wasting the country's resources. Jean Ping also insists that he won the recent elections.
We thought that while we are facing difficulties, tremendous difficulties in our country, while we have problem of finance, salary are not paid, school are not built, there is nothing in schools or hospitals, how can we spend such amount of money just for building stadium? And those who still continue to said we should hold that cup, the result is there. The stadium was empty.
Now, after the elections last year, you refused to accept the results. You said there were irregularities. Do you still refuse the results? Would you still say you don't accept the current president as your president?
It is the contrary. We won the election. Everybody know that I won the election. Everybody know that. 60% I won the elections. The whole international community knows that. Those who cheat the election knows that. They know, everybody know that I won the election. And then, due to a process as usual of confiscation, of manipulation, of what happened here, they changed this result as usual.
Jean Ping, a former presidential aspirant in Gabon. Now, Wanjiku, stars also make news. Away from the hard news, what are some of the stories that you have?
Yes, indeed. We start with Madonna, the U.S. pop star. You might have heard of him, Isaac, or have listened to even her music.
Of course, but of course, this is more of a bigger story than music itself. Go ahead, please.
Yes, a court in Malawi today gave her the go-ahead to adopt two more children, 4-year-old twins from the country, and we had this item in our news.
Yeah, it seems she's fascinated with Malawi and she's adopting more kids. I thought she had some adopted kids from Malawi again.
Yes, indeed. She does have two already. And now she's going to be having 4 children from Malawi. But Isaac, also remember that she has a charity in Malawi. So she does have vested interest. And we have comments regarding this. Billy Jr. asks, why not adopt American children? They are just Hollywood stars are just using black children as accessories. Of course, this is a very sensitive topic as well.
Yeah, well, it's sensitive, and of course, there have been many comments on that, you know, topic. But anyway, I don't know whether we shall have time to go through them in another next, you know, as people keep on, you know, sending them anyway.
Yes, indeed. We'll see. We'll monitor your comments.
And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program. Welcome once again. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host, together with my co-host
Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Angolan journalists vow to continue fighting for freedom of speech despite continued police harassment.
Vale a pena nós continuarmos a lutar.
It's worth fighting for. It's worth taking the risk for press freedom. Because Angola is sick and we need an independent, lively, attentive press.
Now, today is the Safer Internet Day. But what does that mean and what are you talking about this particular day?
Well, we start in Ghana, where a fishing ban has been imposed in the country. According to authorities, the purpose of the ban is to allow for more breeding to replenish the declining stocks. About 10% of Ghana's population relies on fish, but the government says there could soon be shortage if measures are not taken to protect the sea. Isaac Kalechi in Accra reports that some retailers and players in the sector are not entirely happy with the ban.
I am standing on the shores of the Tema Fishing Harbour, where significant fishing activity in Ghana takes place. On a normal day, the harbour is filled with fishmongers, brokers and buyers. But today, it's relatively calm here. That is because of a ban that has been placed on fishing in Ghana. The ban, which came from the Ministry of Fisheries and Aquaculture Development and the Fisheries Commission, will last for the next 2 months. Deputy Director for Monitoring, Control and Surveillance at the Fisheries Commission, Godfrey Bedu Chibu, explains to me the reasons behind the ban.
More and more, there's a decline. So there's a need for us to put in these measures. And when we put in these measures, the expectation is that we are allowing the fishes to have more time to breed. And with fish, the fishes that we are talking about, they mature very quickly.
Despite Chibu's reasons, it appears players in the fishing sector have some concerns. Trawlers who fish at this harbour say staying out away from work for the next 60 days will be challenging. Oyiman Ofori Enin is secretary to the Ghana Industrial Trawlers Association.
What do I do to my seamen for 2 months? You got to pay them, pay their salary, pay their social security. What do we do? We have suggested that we need to establish a permanent joint team that will look at the roadmap. Because if this thing is going to be a feature of our operations for the next 5-6 years, then we need a roadmap that can guide us.
It's not the trawlers alone who have issues. Retailers who solely depend on fish from the harbour to do business are alarmed at this ban. They fear being thrown out of business within this period.
The customers are coming here all the time. You have to get new product for them. When they come and you have any old stocks, maybe they run to the other side. And second, if you are not having those fish in the stock, those who have it may increase their price.
We are going home for 2 good months. It's really going to affect us. Everybody is thinking about it. Especially the coasters, we rented it. And whether you put fish in it or not, you are supposed to pay.
But the Fisheries Commission says its directive will, in the long run, help improve the fortunes of Ghana's fishing industry. Godfrey Bedu Chibu again.
This is a very important program for the sustainability of the fish stocks. We have 10% of the population depending on, fish, for their livelihoods. It means that all of us must be concerned about it.
The ban has taken effect, but the impact it may cause will be measured in the coming days. Hopefully, it should make the fishing industry in Ghana better.
Isaac Kalechi reporting about the fish ban in Ghana.
Africa on the move.
Now, police raids and threats against Folhato newspaper journalists has become a common thing in Angola. The newspaper is critical of the government and has reported on numerous corruption scandals. It also covers mostly opposition activities, which pits it against the government. This has not impressed President Eduardo dos Santos, who has ruled the country since 1979, but who until recently announced that he would step down. This report by Adrian Krish is now presented by Isela Oneko.
It's been a year now since 17 young Angolans were arrested after being caught discussing a book in a literature club. It was a book about non-violent protest against dictatorships. In June 2016, journalist Cedric de Carvalho and the rest of the group were set free again. For them, freedom of speech is an ongoing process. And although their time in prison was not too long ago, Carvalho and his group have started speaking at public meetings once again.
I am a journalist. When I was arrested, the investigators told me it was because I was planning to report in the media on a planned coup. What an honor. I thought I must be an important journalist.
He has to limit his humor on this particular day as the police are watching him closely. Surprisingly, they don't interrupt. Carvalho works for Folha Oito, an independent paper that has uncovered various corruption cases implicating the government. Even the newspaper vendors in the capital, Luanda, have to be careful. They often hide Folha Oito between other newspapers.
I also have to protect my own life. My vendors are beaten up and arrested by the police. That happens very often. Many are just taken away by the police. They are always after us.
At the newspaper, Carvalho has always had full support. While he was in jail, his editor, William Tonnet, faced over 100 charges of his own and even received death threats.
Vale a pena nós continuarmos a lutar.
It's worth fighting for. It's worth taking the risk for press freedom. Because Angola is sick and we need an independent, lively, attentive press. A press that prevents the freedom in our country from being suffocated bit by bit.
That report was filed by Adrian Krish.
Focus Europe.
And for this week's Focus on Europe segment, we head to France, where presidential candidate François Fillon is embroiled in a financial scandal over payments of public funds to his wife and children. Fillon beat rivals, including former President Nicolas Sarkozy, to become the centre-right candidate in this year's presidential elections. He has vowed not to step down, but the latest revelations of financial misappropriation have cost him support. According to the latest polls, his rivals, including far-right leader Marine Le Pen, have gained ground. So the race for the presidency remains wide open ahead of the first round of the election on April 23rd. Lisa Bryant reports on the developments from Paris.
It's a raw and rainy afternoon, but that hasn't stopped thousands from trekking to the gritty Villette neighborhood of northeastern Paris. The main attraction is not the nearby Science Museum, but conservative presidential candidate François Fillon, a former prime minister running on a ticket of family values and tough reforms. 45-year-old businessman Fadi Lahoud likes Fillon's economic prescriptions.
We need the companies to find again some ways to be able to develop their own businesses and to be able to hire people in an easy way.
But these days, Fillon is getting the kind of attention politicians would rather not have. Prosecutors are examining allegations that his wife Penelope received hundreds of thousands of euros of taxpayer money for work she may not have done.
À travers Pénélope, on cherche à me casser. Moi.
Fillon denounces the allegations as an unfounded smear campaign. Corinne Maloul is a political scientist at Sciences Po University in Paris.
That might get him in trouble, especially because he has repackaged, quote-unquote, himself as an ethical candidate who wants to do away with the old practices of cronism and nepotism, etc.
Et en même temps, parce que ces deux promesses sont inséparables.
38-year-old Emmanuel Macron, who is running as an independent, also faces allegations of misusing public funds when he was economy minister under the current socialist government. He denies them, and so far they haven't seemed to have much impact. His En Marche, or Forward movement, once dismissed as a short-term novelty, has drawn thousands of supporters and shows sticking power.
He has appeal with voters, especially younger voters. He is charismatic, but he's an unknown quantity. He's not very experienced in politics. His program is not very clear. It's kind of vague on a number of issues.
Fillon's legal headaches have already cost him support. A new poll now finds Macron beating him in the first round of voting April 23rd and eliminating the first round winner, far-right candidate Marine Le Pen, in a runoff. Le Pen also faces and denies accusations of abusing public funds for a European Parliament salary paid to a staff member working for her National Front party. The only major candidate with a clean slate right now seems to be left-wing rebel Benoît Hamon. Hamon just won the Socialist Party primaries. He wants to legalize marijuana, tax robots, and guarantee a universal 750 euro a month income, which critics say is unrealistic. So far, this election season has been full of surprises. And for now, at least, it's hard to say just how it will end.
Lisa Bryant with that report on the French politics. And back to the social media. Wanjiku, what do we have?
Well, Isaac, today is the annual Safer Internet Day. And this day is just this year especially is about kids and how to protect them online. You know, lots of kids are now getting access to mobile phones and tablets and other gadgets that enable them to get online. So how do people ensure that their kids are safe online?
Yeah, the parents have to be cautious about this, you know. I mean, and you said you had a question on the Facebook page to that effect.
Yes, indeed. We posed the question, how do you keep safe online? And we had responses from, for example, from Isaac Ehoza Godwin, who says, well, I downloaded a software called CM Security Browser, which makes my browsing safe, and my history is deleted after I finish with my business online. Another comment here came in from Bello Ishiaku, who says there are many cybersecurity softwares such as email spam filter. So he's recommending this application that someone could use for their email. Isaac, how do you keep safe on the internet?
Do you want me to tell you with many passwords and, of course, the internet firewall? And, of course, yeah, we have the antivirus, you know, software. There's so many out there anyway.
Yes, indeed. And also for our dear listeners, remember we do have a Crime Fighter series dealing on safety online. The crime fighter called Cyberlink is purely on how you can create a safe password, how you can ensure that the emails you're getting are safe and secure. And so you should definitely have a listen to this educative series. Mm-hmm. Well, Isaac, a teacher in a school in England went online to prove to his students how fast and far a picture can go. He took a picture of his hand. And on it, he had written, please share and comment from which country you are. And Isaac, this picture grew a life of its own. It went all over the world with people commenting, I am from Luanda and I've seen the picture. And this experiment was for his students to see that you can, as a user, as an internet citizen, you can post a picture and you really cannot determine how far it can go and to whom it will reach.
But of course, Wanjiku, you have to remember that, you know, sometimes nice pictures end up with the wrong people making wrong comments. You remember the picture of the famous selfie that a Syrian refugee took with the German Bundeskanzler Angela Merkel, you know?
Yes,
and
indeed.
Now he's suing Facebook because of, you know, what the pictures turn out to be. You know?
Exactly.
And his adopted family or foster family has come out to defend him, you know.
Yeah, you do not have any, you have limited strength or power after your picture is out there. Now, just to quickly tie to that, in Cameroon, there hasn't been any internet. And the government ordered an internet shutdown a couple of last month, actually. And people have been talking about it. Just a quick comment here from Kawala, who says there is no justification or explanation.
And the hashtag, bring back our internet.
Yes, exactly. This is what they're using to discuss this. And there is no justification.
Anyway, I'm afraid Wanjiku will have to leave it at that. For more news, visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
And our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And from me, Isaac Mugabe.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
Bye for now and take care.